The goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. We do that every week by sharing the stories and advice from people who are rocking it on the other side. This week, we hear from someone that has created two campaigns on the world's best ads of all time list, created by The Drum. Jason Sperling is the Global Executive Creative Director of Reality Labs at Meta, where he oversees AR, VR, and metaverse marketing. Jason developed the Apple Get a Mac campaign. It was declared Campaign of the Decade by Adweek and Top 15 Campaigns of the Century by AdAge. It was declared, quote-unquote, pretty good by Steve Jobs. So stick around this episode to hear a fantastic story where he recalls pitching an idea directly to Steve Jobs. Jason's been fortunate to be included on a few of the industry best lists. He was selected by Adweek as one of the top 30 creative directors in the country, and recently he was selected by Campaign US for their 40, over 40, top digital creatives list. He says this is a bittersweet honor. His work has been recognized by top award shows. He's won the Cannes Gold Lion in film, cyber, design, health, and branded content and entertainment. Wow. He's won a Grand Effie, but his mom still brags about his Emmy nomination. Jason's written two industry books as well. His first book, Look at Me When I'm Talking to You, Building Brand Attraction in an Age of Brand Aversion, is about breakthrough creative and was released on Instagram. His second book, Creative Directions, Mastering the Transition from Talent to Leader, quote, a HarperCollins leadership book, is a primer for creative people of all types stepping into leadership roles. This is a packed episode with fantastic advice and resources. To connect and see his resources, head to our website, www.breaking-entering.com, to get access to our master resource list. It's free. Now on with the show. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast, and as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right, Jason Sperling, welcome to the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. So pumped to have you on. How are you doing today in Encino? Was that what you said?
Encino, California? Yeah. Home of Encino Man with Pauly Shore, if you're into old film. The Galleria, which was the backdrop for the movie Valley Girl and Commando, the Schwarzenegger movie. And if you watched, actually, it just recently got used in Licorice Pizza, which was like, I think in the first 5 minutes, they talk about Encino being home to one of the characters. So it definitely gets used in movies and TV these days.
Well, that's how you know it's probably a nice place.
Yeah. I mean, it depends what you want in the world. You know, it's got, you know, LA culture, take it or leave it. But I love it. It's a good place to raise kids and, you know, have, I think, all the comforts of LA without being too far in the center of it. If you know what I mean.
Sure. I've never been to LA. I just visited San Francisco. I know it's not even close, but just got out to California for the first time. Loved it.
Yeah. San Francisco is like its own little microclimate place. And
yeah,
it's like New York without the dirtiness, the grunge. I lived in San Francisco for about 7 years and loved it there. I always think about it romantically now, but knowing full well that I couldn't just like go and live in the city again. I'd have to like go to the suburbs. And if you're going to live in the suburbs, it's like you could really live anywhere.
Yeah. Interesting. So maybe we'll talk about where you work there when you were in San Francisco. But for now, let's kick it off the top here, because you are the Global Executive Creative Director at Reality Labs at Meta. Did I get that correct?
Yeah. We've I've been there 2 years and it's undergone like so many transformations in that time. Originally it was just Reality Labs and we were like a separate unit from Meta, which was Facebook. And now we're in the process of being sort of brought in a lot closer and taking away that separation. But we used to be the hardware division. And now we're part of the main company as they restructure.
Okay. So a lot to talk about in this episode. Definitely want to uncover what you're doing what you're doing today at Meta. Also, yeah. You have some amazing agency experience, RPA, Media Arts Lab, Chiat Day, and Colby and Partners. We got to definitely break down like some of your amazing campaign work at those agencies, including Mac and PC, Mac versus PC, and that Honda ad that was also listed on the Drum's, what was it, 100 best ads of all time?
Yeah.
You have two spots on there.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is, I don't have any spots on there. But.
You're younger than me. Yeah. And honestly, it'll always be seen as like, not real humility, but the truth is that, I didn't start out, necessarily with the pedigree and privilege of a lot of kids coming out of school. I definitely floundered for a lot of years,
right,
trying to figure things out. So, I look at it with a certain amount of surprise. I think there was a mix of good fortune and hard work. But I think anything in advertising is, you can only control so much. It really is like this team. It, number one, it's a team sport. And number two, it's like you are so, especially in the agency world, you're so incredibly reliant on, the stars aligning in terms of like great idea, team to support it, money to support it, production goes perfect, client says, oh my God, I love it, it's challenging me in the right ways, I have the courage to take it to my boss and their boss and I'm going to push it through. There are so many things that stand in the way of great work that it's so hard to evaluate someone in advertising on the things that they made. I think I read the other day that George Lois is like, who just passed away, he was an icon in our industry, said something about like, he was only curious about what you made versus what didn't get made. And I actually don't subscribe to that quite as much because it's hard to get things made. It really is. And we're fortunate when we have something, that has incredible success, there's so much involved and the chances of it getting through are not necessarily in your favor.
Definitely. And there's so many things out of our control as creatives in this industry. So, and you can argue, I don't know, do you argue that as technology is accelerating and client timelines, like in assignments and briefs seem to be shrinking, do you think it's harder to get stuff like approved now, or was it easier back then, or is it harder back then when you had 2-3 weeks on?
I mean, it depends what you're talking about. I mean, you look at the world of car advertising, which was a part of my life for a while, and for the most part, timelines are really like way off. It's sort of like you got months to prepare for getting something, sometimes a year, that can't always be said for, like at Meta, we tend to there's been so much change and so much evolution that like our timelines are constantly getting compressed and it does become a challenge. Not necessarily to get something done, but to get it right in the time that we have. Then, of course, you factor in the fact that now I'm on the client side and I can't be there for the entire process of ideation, approvals, tweaking things. I'm really there towards the end, the process. And I have to have faith that there's someone on that side who's getting things done. But, you know, in terms of like getting great work through and the challenges of technology, I look at it as like a blessing and a curse. You know, it definitely becomes an easier conversation to have with a client or someone on, you know, tied to the product to say, look, things aren't in your favor right now. You know, media, people are overstimulated. They truly hate most advertising these days. Yeah. You know, that we're being accelerated into this like shorter format, you know, get in and out, say what you need to say, you know, say it, you know, get the messaging out fast, in case they, you know, they whatever, skip the ad after 5 seconds. You know, it's altered our narrative structures. And so it behooves a client to be brave and take risks and do things that are outside the norm now, just because it's so hard to get attention that you have to work that much harder. So that argument is easier to make now. And especially too, as we factor in technology and innovation and younger audiences, like you have to do things that are a little different. Mm-hmm. If you go back 20 years when media channels were pretty set in stone, and it was really about like, you know, very traditional, now we call them traditional, but very traditional formats, mm-hmm. you know, it's harder to make that argument with a client, you know, because it really is like people had assumed that, all right, advertising is basically something that I just have to deal with, you know, it's the way I get content. It was an assumed relationship with advertisers, and that's just not the case anymore. So, you know, it makes it really apparent for marketers now to do things that are different. And I think it's almost like having too much food on the table in terms of like, there are just so many options for where that message could go, how it can be delivered. And so it becomes, I think, it becomes riskier, yes, but it actually becomes harder too to sort of say, where am I going to put my money and place my bets if I am a marketer? You know, it's, you know, do I put it in the metaverse or do I put it, you know, all in social, or do I, you know, buy, you know, get influencers to do it for me? Yeah. You know, do I sponsor a stadium? Like, there's just no single right answer.
Yeah, definitely more complicated. I mean, and you bring up a good point. Like, if I was on the brand side, I wouldn't know where to start, like who to believe. Research can point you to all directions of what's right and what's wrong. So I want to know your take and like what you guys are doing at Meta. Like, how do you navigate being on the client side, working into like this internal lab? Like, what's going on there? What do you guys believe works?
I mean, we don't have like a secret formula that other advertisers yeah. don't.
Sure.
You know, we deal with, you know, we've got it's hard to say just blanket statement, sort of what works, what doesn't, philosophy. I mean, we definitely believe that creativity is a way to unlock things. And I think too, like building a brand, and really one thing they do really well is, you know, having a good understanding of who you are, which drives your behaviors, which drives your, you know, your execution. And that's really crucial, I think, for any brand these days to really understand who they are and have that connectivity across everything we do. We also, I think, recognize too that, like, you know, we are at the heart a pretty innovative company, you know, between the platforms and some of these new territories like AR and VR. So innovation is at the heart of what we do. We're at this weird crossroads where we're, on the one hand, trying to take what is like the height of innovation and make it understandable, relatable, approachable. And so there's that side of things, but it's also, how do we use innovation to build on what we're doing? knowing full well we're talking with a pretty tech savvy audience at the end of the day. But in terms of like, you know, every brand out there, it's really like you've got everything at your fingertips. I think for a brand like Meta, it behooves us to really really understand, not just understand, but connect with our audiences, right? And to help show how people are using it, help show how people are using VR or Horizon Worlds, which is like the metaverse, to talk about, you know, use cases and you know, share, the wonderful stories from our community
even more granular. So I see on your resume here, it says you're leading global marketing retail efforts for all Reality Lab brands, including MetaQuest VR, Horizon Worlds, Workrooms, Beat Saber, Ray-Ban, Story. Yeah, yeah. What are these things and who's the audience really? And do you have, is this satisfying your creative itch, I guess?
Oh yeah. When I first got to Meta, it was an interesting thing. Cause I actually dropped down a level. I was, you know, part of the C-suite at my old agency. There were about 20 of us on the executive council, maybe 30 of us. And when I came to Meta, I actually came in as an executive creative director again. And so I was like, you know, I want to be part of this movement, which I thought was really at an inflection point and could be just a really cool moment in time. And I had sort of, you know, I'd ridden that comet when I was at Media Arts Lab, you know, being part of the launch of the first iPhone, the first iPad, Mac and PC. So here was like another moment and I was like, gotta do it. And when I got here about 3 weeks in, and I'd just been hired to oversee VR, the CCO at the time said, hey, how do you feel about running the entire product unit? And I was like, there's just so much cool stuff here. I couldn't say no. And even though I was working day and night, weekends, it was in the middle of the pandemic, which made it a lot easier. I didn't care. And so I was up at 7 a.m. talking to the Ray-Ban team in Italy and Amsterdam. And then, you know, talking to our EMEA team in Japan, you know, at the end of the day, covering shoots in the middle of the night for, you know, our Resident Evil and VR launch. Like, it didn't matter to me. We were just doing some of the coolest stuff in the world. All different audiences, really. I mean, you know, Ray-Ban Stories, you know, it's like having, you know, cameras and microphones in your glasses and allowing people to like really experience the world outside of their phone screen. So when you go to a concert, you're not necessarily having to pull out your phone and capture that moment or be apart from that moment. You can actually be in it and explaining that story to people and a lot younger audiences there. Portal, which was our video conferencing device, that was really about how do you connect families? And here we were in the middle of the pandemic, you know, how do you connect people when they really need that connection most? And so very different audiences there. And VR was really like, how do we drive usage when there's a lot of misconceptions still? Even though the product had finally reached that point, we had, you know, we had games, we had form factor, we had price, like everything had lined up and was making it like just the thing everybody wanted at the time. But there were a lot of misconceptions that it was just for games and it was for nerds and it separated you from people. And, you know, the list went on and on. And so that became really, in a lot of ways, like the Mac and PC campaign, where it's like, it's not so much about trying to sell people or build the brand. I mean, we've still been building the brand, but it was really about how do we figure out how to talk about all these misconceptions people have that are getting in the way of the obvious, which is this is really freaking cool. And you know, there's no reason you shouldn't be using it.
Yeah. Love it. And what were some of those executions that you're proud of?
We did a campaign for the holidays in 2021 that was called Quest is Ready. And it was all about, well, one of the things was really about reacting to a lot of people's, whether it was press or tweets, really addressing some of those things head on. And then just really making sure that whatever narrative we were doing was all about addressing the fact that, hey, VR is more than just gaming.
Yep.
VR is actually social. And so tackling those, but, yeah.
Cool. Love it. So you've been there for 2 years now. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
And we can definitely dive into more about like what it's like working there, but I do want to kick it back. You said that because I want to get into your career. You said you didn't kind of, it took you a while to, you floundered, I think you said. Tell us
yeah.
more. Break-in story, how you got into this industry, and then we'll hint at some of those famous campaigns that you've crafted over your experience. So where was that moment where you're like, I want to do advertising? Well, did you remember that break-in like thought?
Yeah, you know, I was at the job board at college, having changed my majors a million times, mm-hmm. and knowing everybody was you know on course for you know law school, med school, business school. Whatever they all seemed to know what they wanted to do. And I just couldn't figure out what my talents were. And I had taken like a computer graphics course. I had written on the school paper in high school and in my first year of college and had written more of like creative writing, but I didn't think I was very like a great writer per se. And so I was at the job board and there was a job for marketing and selling condoms. Which was totally on point for, you know, college. Called up, it was the wrong job. It actually was for a creative intern at it's called the LA Business Journal. And, you know, wasn't a remarkable job, but it did sort of show me that like, oh my God, commercial creativity is a thing. And I could actually make a career out of making ads. And then simultaneously, there were, you know, there was a show on TV called 30 something and, you know, these guys just, you know, made ads and shot hoops in their office. And I was like, shoot, there might be something here. And so I had a really, really mediocre book that I put together, got rejected from just about every school. The Academy of Art, I think, you know, I got that through just a conversation with the head of the department. And in my first class, you know, I had a teacher say like, your art direction totally sucks. But your writing is okay. I think compliments were hard to come by in grad school. I even had a teacher light my work on fire at one point.
That's awesome. Was this a junior like portfolio school? What was this school again?
The Academy of Art in San Francisco.
Okay.
So I went there for grad school.
The master's program portfolio.
It was a master's program. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And did you have an emphasis in advertising or was it just?
Yeah, they had an emphasis in advertising and they even had an emphasis in copywriting, which I did.
So you went the copy route after somebody said your art direction wasn't great?
Pretty much. And you know what? They were right. You know, delivery sure. might've been a little, cruel, heavy handed, but like, I think they wanted you to come out of there with like, a bit calloused, you know, like before you stepped into an agency and got torn to shreds.
I'm all for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the carrot or the stick is always the debate. And I personally feel like those of us who are in this, we're already tortured souls, you know, like, we're, yeah, we've got anxiety over whether or not we're going to have a career next year, 10 years,
yeah.
worried that, you know, our boss likes someone else more than us. Like there are plenty of insecurities that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily feel like you need to torture someone even further. If anything, I want people to feel good and not have to worry about that so that they can really focus on coming up yeah. with great work.
Absolutely. Did you say, so you, for way back, you said you were applying for condom sales? Is that what you said?
Well, I thought that was going to be the job, and it ended up being this other job. So it was a little like, it never happened, and God knows who took that job selling condoms, and God knows what it even was. I don't even, you know, was I just handing them out at concerts? Was I, you know, driving them around in my car and dropping them off places? I have no idea. I will never know. All I know is it led me, you know, to a career direction. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, like, you know, when I came out of school, I knew what I wanted to do. I just didn't know if I'd have any success doing it. And having just done undergraduate and then two more years of graduate school and still not being sure that I was actually talented at this and still having, you know, like, one of my favorite people on earth is this recruiter that I've known for years, who helped me get the job at RPA, and I just love her to death. And she spoke at my school way back when and said, hey, there's only a small percentage of you that are going to make it in this industry. And you need to know that, you know, more tough love. I mean, it just never fails. And so it was always in the back of my mind, like, holy shit, am I going to make it? Or am I going to be like, you know, 3 years in this and then go working at my dad's carpet store, which I was desperately trying to avoid.
That sounds okay.
Selling carpet. Number one, not a salesman. Number two, don't want to be that close to my dad. And three, it's carpet. There's nothing glamorous about carpet.
I feel like carpets are expensive now.
Well, you know, I don't know actually, but I did do some marketing for my dad. Like I did actually make some campaigns, and like one of my favorites in my book for a long time was one that I had done for my dad, maybe a little too high-minded for what he was trying to do. Which was
what,
like,
was the idea?
It was about start from the ground up. So it was about, the insight was that, you know, people are designing their homes because there's a lot of people who, you know, buy carpet when they're, you know, doing a big remodel, and they think about carpet last. And so here it was about, hey, start from the ground up. And visually what I did is it was a stacked headline that made no sense if you read it from top to bottom, but if you read it from bottom to top, you got it. And it was all about how you should be thinking about carpet first.
Genius.
But
that's great.
But dad really wanted to say, like, hey, we have, you know, DuPont Anso 4 nylon for $4.99 a yard.
That's good too.
So it didn't quite fit with that. But yeah, that's an early thing.
You might have been I'm sure that carpet campaign might have been at a running for a Cam Lion. If it was approved.
If it actually had gone through all the right channels and actually
even a case study about it.
Yeah, that would have been my big claim to fame.
Love it.
I could have been a carpet king in another way.
Yeah. Okay. So
yes.
You were worried, where are we at? I got distracted with carpet. So you're worried about not making it. Where did you end up, like, as your first job?
Yeah, I ended up my thesis, because we had to do a thesis in grad school, was on the San Francisco Giants. And it had just been like a strike year. The Giants sucked. I loved baseball. I did like a tour of all the baseball stadiums with my brother. And
Oh, you like Wrigley Field?
I loved Wrigley Field until they yelled at me for stealing Ivy.
Don't do that.
So I went to the agency that was actually doing the Giants advertising, and they gave me an internship. It was, you know, it was not, you know, look, I was at this time, like, my inspiration, we all got our inspiration from reading advertising annuals, which were like the big books, the Lurzer's Archives, Communication Arts. Yep. And, you know, you just go through them and go like, oh, I want to do that. Oh, I want to be there, you know, and that was our life, you know, it was just jealousy, envy, you know, lustful longing to be at these places. And I didn't have the portfolio to get in there. I was working at these agencies that were not giving me any real shots at getting that portfolio. And so it really was like, I worked at this agency for a couple of years, like, nothing really great came of it. you know, aside from just like the madness of working for you know, a guy who who was just absolutely insane, you know, walked down the hallway with a joint in his mouth, brought, you know, his lovers who were not his wife to the agency late at night when we were all there. Like, it was just madness. And then after that, I went to a really small agency. That was about 30 people. I went to a really small agency, and, you know, toiled there, really working on like copy for bags of lettuce and .coms that were going nowhere.
Yeah.
And so I was not really like getting the opportunity. And I felt like, you know what, I'm just going to be, you know, working at, you know, some middling agencies and hopefully I can carve out a, you know, an existence. You know, it's not all of us are going to, you know, go to big agencies and do these things. And then I went to Colby and Partners after the agency folded, or actually, no, I got fired. Let's be honest here. And I went there and I was working on, I don't know, Suzuki motorcycles and some local, you know, California avocados making billboards.
Nice.
And, but still it was just like, it was not enough to really put me on the radar. And so I was writing a lot of scripts. Not a lot of them were getting, the great ones were not getting bought. And so there was a, at the time, a message board that was being used by production companies and agency producers. It was called Where's Spot, and it was on Yahoo. And you went there and they would ask questions like, hey, does anybody know a good DP? Or, hey, where can I get a, you know, what's a good, you know, sound design place, whatever they, you know, production things. And so I went on there knowing full well that there were production companies on there. And I would say, hey, does anybody have a young director? I've got these unused scripts. Let's make something, you know, they'll get something out of it. I'll get something out of it. You know, everybody wins. And I ended up doing about, I don't know, six different commercials that were really like edgy and crazy, and they ended up winning a ton of awards. Well, what I would do too is, because the legitimacy mattered to me, I know we were at the time, everyone was like, you know, spec, doing spec and then, you know, entering it in award shows.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, we can do that, but I want to make sure it runs. I want to make sure it's out there and legitimate. And so once I made it, I would actually go give it away to a company and I'd say, hey, let me run some media for you so that it actually ran. And then it was up to them whether or not they wanted to continue to run it. So there was one for a beer brand and I sold it to Red Tail Ale. There was one for a map store in LA. I gave it to them. Yeah, there were a few, and so they started winning some awards, and getting some attention, and that got me a conversation with, and I won't go into all the details, but it got me a conversation with the Apple team, and through that conversation, two of us got, they were looking for writers. There was an exodus happening because another big project, Steve kind of just like ground everyone down and a lot of people were leaving. So they needed writers. I came on board. The head of the group actually with very little fanfare. I interviewed with him in a broom closet. I don't even think he bothered turning the lights on. And he just said, how do you feel about writing body copy? And I'm like, I'll write you the best fucking body copy you've ever seen.
This was meanwhile, the lead, there was at the time, the lead creative.
What this is what
who was interviewing it?
This was the managing director. So this was like my final interview. The creative directors had basically, I think, vouched for me or at least, you know, gave me their support. This guy had to be sort of the last filter. And they were looking at two of us. One guy they were flying in from Wyden, Shanghai, flew him and his girlfriend in, you know, put him up for the night, took him bike riding on the beach, took him out to dinner, wine and dine. He got the job. And then they gave me body copy broom closet guy, another job, and probably not expecting very much. And rightfully so. I mean, I had a pretty like hodgepodge, book, at the time. You want me to continue with the story?
Yeah.
Okay.
All in. Yeah.
So, it was an interesting time for me personally because, my wife was pregnant. We had one child that was, under two. And 2 months into my being there, I had twins. So
wow.
I had three kids under the age of two. I got handed the brief for rebranding the Mac. And it became about 6 months of just hell. You know, no sleep, no real peace back home. And then like just week after week, just getting told like, no, your idea sucks. Try something new. We had almost gotten something off the ground, but the star that we wanted to use, after months of negotiating, decided not to. So we were at square one. Steve Jobs, basically told the agency, where's my fucking campaign? I'm launching this thing. Where is everything? And we basically had like a call to arms. I liken it to like, all the bounty hunters come together in Empire Strikes Back, they're looking for Han Solo. Here it was like every big name in advertising, they got together and were like, we haven't cracked this for Steve. He's really starting to get pissed off. You have basically a weekend to crack it. Most of us at the agency had already had our breakdowns. There were tears shed. There were people who had left, people who were like just at their wit's end.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put in one.
Freelancers?
Huh?
They brought in freelancers?
They brought in freelancers to compete with all of us who had worked on it for like, the last 6 months trying to crack it. So
who
like
some big name freelancers that you saw, you're like, oh shit.
I don't remember all their names. I remember like a lot of them were like Wieden and Kennedy, the superstars. So I just remember like, and then of course they brought in the best of the best from Shia Day, which is, we were at Shia at the time.
Yep.
And so they brought them in to try and crack it.
Everybody is just tasked for the weekend, come back with something.
Yeah. It's free for all. It's like, all right, jump ball. Everybody's in it. Best idea wins. I think it was
at the time.
How old was I?
Yeah.
I was not young.
Okay.
I was probably.
But like in your advertising career, like you had like how many years of experience at this point?
Oh, at this point, I'd worked 5 years at Colby and probably three other years. So 8 years about.
Okay.
Enough to realize like, holy shit, I'm completely scared by this. And I will say too, that like when I had gotten to Shiat, I was like, even if I don't get the job, I've made it. Like I was, this was not, this was like the mecca for me. And I even kept my name tag as like a memento, like I, to mark the occasion.
Yeah, of course.
So me being here, I had massive imposter syndrome thinking, there's, I don't belong with these names. It was actually my future partner on Mac and PC who basically came up with the construct. And then I became the sort of lead writer, for sort of all the different iterations that we did. And then ultimately it became mine after the first year to really run for the next three. While everybody else was sort of trying, on the first teams trying to crack the iPhone or the iPad.
Yeah.
Once we sort of got that bought off on, it was a lot more fun. There was still like legitimate concerns week in and week out about shit, will Steve love, will he like anything, you know, or are these the best we can do? How do we, you know, continually raise the stakes on this? Yeah. You know, and that's not even factoring in like all the complications of like dealing with like, you know, these actors and directors who've got like strong opinions about the work and trying to navigate what we need to say, what they want to say,
how they deliver it,
all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I truly believe it was the best boot camp ever, for this business, and that nothing will ever faze me. You know, when they say like, oh, things are going to get difficult right now, it's just like, yeah, you don't know difficult. Like Bring you it. Just don't know.
And obviously I gotta give my guy Tim Nutt a shout out. Like with, he did a great job explaining that campaign.
Oh yeah.
Tagline. Yeah. I mean, but my question, when you guys came back that weekend, you said your partner had that main concept. Like, yeah. Did he have a moment? Like, were you guys writing together?
No.
They're big, just kind of like on his own.
He was off on his own. He was best friends with the lead of our group. And I think he had just seen a play. His daughter was in a play. And he was really obsessed with just super simple. Like, I mean, he's now leading Airbnb. And if you ever see the Airbnb
work,
like
great.
Dead simple, smart, gets to the heart of things. And he's just a really great problem solver in that
What's
way.
His name?
Scott Trattner.
Shout out.
So he, you know, just had this really great, you know, what if, and, you know, like there were a lot of, we didn't even have a strategy really going in. We thought, okay, this is, you know, is it about all the great things you can do on a Mac? And is it about creativity? Ultimately, it was like, it had to be so many things. It had to be, you know, how do we, again, like demystify what a Mac is all about? How do we, you know, hit on all the pain points, which when you actually think about them rationally, like you shouldn't be working on a PC. You hate your PC. PCs suck. And it was just such a great vehicle to make a lot of different arguments.
93? You
know, what's that?
How many did you make? 93?
Oh no, we made like hundreds, close to 400. We ended up airing, was it 93? Something small comparatively.
That's not,
and those were just the ones that got made. I mean, we'd go in with stacks and stacks of ideas. And then we'd ultimately shoot about, I would say 15 to 20 in a week's time. Hopefully we run three of them. You know, and then, yeah. And then we start doing it for other regions. We start doing, digital. So the banner ad campaign, was then part of it. So it became sort of a cottage industry.
Interesting. And then what were the approvals like? It was you and your partner leading it. Were other people trying to write as well? Who is approving the ideas? Was it going up to Lee Clow and then Steve? What was the higher?
You know, so we had one moment where we'd already sold the idea in. He was cool with it. And now we had to go iterate and show him some scripts. And we developed a few scripts. And here I found myself in a room with Steve Jobs. I had Lee Clow on one side. I had that managing director who put me in the broom closet on the other side. I was wearing, I think I was PC. Barton Corley, who was another writer, was wearing the Mac shirt. And we end up reading these scripts to Steve. And after each one, he's just like, that's just so fucking stupid. That's so inane. Nobody cares. Like, and Lee Clow would go, read this one. You know, he'd pull it off, read the next one. So we did that, and I walked out, and I think everybody was like heartbroken, and I was just like, Steve Jobs told me I was shit. So I was just like, I was smitten, you know, like great. And so, but the important thing is we decided, all right, let us go shoot these. Cause you know, at the time Apple was, you know, we called it testing. So, you know, let us test with like $1 million of money and make these things. Cause Steve is not going to have the patience to go through scripts. You know, he'll be part of like, you know, what do we want to talk about? What are those, you know, things that he wants to say? Is it, you know, the MagSafe power cord? Is it about, you know, the iLife suite of creative tools? Is it about, you know, the new horrible operating system that PCs have? And so once we figured out what it was we, you know, we wanted to talk about, we just dial in and write around that.
Yeah.
And then we go in and then it was just like, hopefully you've nailed it, you know, and you've had enough brilliant people on that team to where you knew that you could get there.
Yeah. We had such a strong foundation, a platform for that campaign to work in so many different ways to describe and to show all the benefits of the Mac product. So,
but it didn't matter. It did not matter. Steve Jobs was, you know, he had no problem seeing billboards that were about to be put up and just say, kill it. Like, he was fickle. Mm-hmm. You know, if he didn't like the humor, if he didn't like the way things were messaged, it was dead in the water. And so there was nothing stopping him from, especially too, as it matured, you know, it's like he could be moving on, you know, even though we in the ad community were like, this is great. And it's, you know, it's longstanding. And it's like, you know, like a CMO or, you know, a president like Steve is just like, do I still think it's good for my business? Do I still think it's relevant? Do I, you know, so you really had to, hit the bullseye each time. Wow. And like, even when we ran out, we were, I remember this ad in particular, when we were, you know, we were running out of arguments. And we had sort of like attacked the hell out of their operating system. We had already said all the amazing things Macs can do a few times by now. And Microsoft was coming out with another operating system. And so we couldn't tell whether or not it was going to be a failure or a success. So we just had to plant the seeds of doubt. And we did this ad where it was
Love
just like, oh, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was just PC telling Mac, this one's not going to be nearly as bad as the last one. Trust me. And then we just go back in time each year to, and of course, corresponding outfits, which make it kind of fun and enjoyable. Yep. And it's just always him saying, trust me, trust me, trust me. He's like, you know, at the end, he just says, yeah, this one's going to be different this time. Trust me. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a, almost like a bomb that we planted. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, it was sort of in the back of everyone's mind when it came out. Or do you really think this is going to be any different?
Well, subtle, so effective.
So subtle and effective. That one to me was just pure genius.
I grew up in a PC house until this campaign came out. My brother is 3 years older than me, and my family, my mom and dad, they don't really know too much. They just always had PCs, and my brother was always into PC until this campaign came out. And I remember my brother convincing my family, like, we need to switch over, like, for sure. And then they listened to him, and we switched over ever since. So direct effect.
Sweet, it worked
for one person.
Why did they stop the campaign? It worked for you.
I was gonna ask you, do you know why? What happened? Were you there at the end of it?
Of course. I was there till they, you know, they closed the doors of the factory. It was at the end of the day, we had actually shot another full round of stuff. Part of it was like we were still trying, you know, one of the interesting things is like at that point, iPhones were beloved. Everybody had their iPhone. Mm-hmm. And yet still had PC users who were still hanging on. And we wanted to show, like, you know, iPhone, iPod, that whole ecosystem of apps, and, you know, it all worked the way things should. Mm-hmm. And it was super simple and intuitive and smart and human. And we just wanted to capitalize on that. And I remember we were doing this whole iPhone thing. But a bunch of us, there was, I think, 12 of us that were cleared, including Scott, who were allowed to access the iPad. So we were, day job was doing the Mac and PC campaign. Night job was basically starting the groundwork on marketing for the iPad.
Okay.
So while we were sitting there trying to find new arguments for Mac PC, we knew we were, the iPad was going to change the conversation. And, you know, Apple at that point, I think they were doing the Mac PC campaign purely out of the brand, you know, affinity that came with it, versus there was no Microsoft was not the big competitor they used to be. It completely reversed course for them in all the right ways, as I'm sure just a lot of the wash of all the new technology was part of that as well. So iPad, was really Steve was like, Microsoft is not the enemy anymore. Google is our big competitor. And it doesn't make sense to be really targeting them the way we are. So it really, the focus just switched. And we were kind of simultaneously digging the grave for the campaign while we were still writing it, which was just, crazy. But I have a full round, I think 20 spots that never, the very last round, not a single one of them ran, because that was it. Yeah, of course.
Can we release a couple on breaking it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Apple loves that.
Oh, that's awesome. Makes sense. Times change. Google became the new enemy, per se, at the time. And so you switch gears all to the iPad?
Yeah. iPad, iPhone. Where the marketing dollars were flowing.
Amazing. I love it. I want to ask you more questions were you other memories working with Steve Jobs? Obviously, I'm very interested in Lee Clow. He's an icon. Mm-hmm. But maybe we'll do another episode with you, a little bonus episode. We can talk about some of those memories later on, because I do want to get into the advice portion now.
Cool.
Really looking at your career and there's so many other great campaigns working for Honda, the paper ad you worked on, correct? I want to give that a shout out as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing craft.
Amazing. I was so fortunate, to have, worked with that brand, and to have, to have the role that I had, which was a little bit of a bit of an irritant, I guess. It was trying to pull a very conservative client out of comfort zones. The car industry is an interesting one, because there's a lot of people who, there's dealers that, have a lot of power and say over the work that gets done. Honda, run by Japanese, it's, on the conservative side, or at least historically had been. So to go in there and to have, kind of the achievements that I think we had, not just with video, but across, a lot of new media, and not just with ads, but with brand acts and, helping to save the drive-in movie theater, the work we did with children's hospitals, I look back on that body of work with such pride, knowing how much more difficult, it wasn't when it was Apple, the creative bar was so freaking high.
Yeah.
And it was and chances were, nothing is going to get made unless it truly is beautiful or smart or, extremely well written, all those things.
All the above.
Yeah. And here that wasn't necessarily the expectation. And so to help try and drive that, and to see too, just the transformative nature of it, clients saying, I want that again. Or, oh my God, I'm, I'd love to go to Cannes and accept, on behalf of, the, you know, Honda. It was just, it was so fun, you know, and until it wasn't.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it was really great. And that paper ad really came, there was a Japanese chairman at the time who really wanted to get back to the soul of the brand. And at one point, I remember there were a few of us in a room with him, and he turned off the lights and he had us all hold our breath and, you know, talk, you know, feel collectively. I'm killing it, because now in the middle of it, I'm like, fuck, what did this actually stand for? But I think it was about, like, you know, the soul of Honda and finding the soul of Honda. And, you know, finding it in the dark, like, you know, to think that they had the faith in us and the faith in me to spend as much as they did, you know, across all of these things, you know, to put $1 million towards saving the American drive-in, to put the millions of dollars into these, you know, beautiful handcrafted, you know, stop motion videos, to actually, like, in a lot of ways, like, completely avoid the cliches and the tropes of truck advertising and do a stop motion piece, you know, that really was, like, fun and you know, clever and not, like, macho. Like, those were just really fun moments, and not all of them won big awards, but it was just, like, collectively, like, something, you know, like a, you know, work that you could just be proud of. And, you know, it was just so fun. So fun.
You know, I think everybody kind of looks for that. Every creative wants to be in that sort of setting. So or a campaign that runs for years and years, that also helps too.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
So what advice do you have for the aspiring advertiser to get to a position at an agency? What would you do? I don't know. There's a lot of routes we can go with this advice. What are you thinking off the top of your head to get to where you're at a good spot in creative advertising? What would you say to our audience here?
I think, first and foremost, you need to make the most of every opportunity. You know, it's not enough to just get in the door of an agency or a brand, and you know, it's what you do there, and it's those first few jobs that are really going to dictate, I think, a path forward. I think it's a lot of, like, you know, I know that they say, like, you know, the sort of recent generations, there's the expectation of, like, you know, the expectation of, you know, I need approval, and I need, you know, the sort of, let me walk that back. I think you can't go in with the expectation that things are going to be handed to you, or that there's someone more senior that is actually thinking about you and how to, like, you know, give you what you need. You know, you need to basically, and it's funny because it shifts, you know, as you move throughout your career, but you basically need to put the spotlight on yourself. When you get more senior, it is about, like, the spotlight is not you anymore. And that is a hard shift in itself, but, like, you really need to put that spotlight on yourself. And do what you can. And I think it's just an innate curiosity is also really important. Because, you know, media channels are constantly changing. Media channels are not what they were. We're constantly in this sort of, battle between best practices and breakthrough, right? And those two things are at odds with each other in terms of, like, where media spend goes, where clients, you know, heads are at, you know, because one is guaranteed performance to a certain extent, and the other is a bit more risk, and discomfort. So, you know, it's like, how do you build the knowledge base of all that? But understanding that, you know, creatively, a lot of us are judged by the breakthrough that we do. That would be, I think,
it's a balancing act. Yeah,
it is a balancing act. Yeah. And then through all this, you know, I think it's, you know, how do you build skills beyond just being a creative? And I think that's where working in a small agency really helped, is you can't hide it, you know, in a big creative department. There's a lot on your shoulders and you're exposed to a lot of other, you know, strategy, media, production, you know, even account management, you know, and, you know, connecting with clients. Like, so much of that falls on your shoulders. And I think nowadays the best in the business can do it all, to a certain extent. They still have, you know, a title that coincides with their expertise, but like the ones who are really adding value to a place, know strategy, you know how media functions and, you know, the art behind that. So I just think, you know, being curious, not just about the world, not just about innovation, but about like all facets of roles is huge.
Yeah. And that takes time. I always tell people, like, kind of like hone in on your craft. And like, if you're an art director, be good with the Adobe suites and know your layout.
Yeah.
Writer, write good headlines, write good body copy, get those fundamentals down first. And then maybe like in your early in your career and like as you develop, like learn about, be curious as well. Do you disagree with that?
I don't, not at all. But I do think it's hard to find, especially when you're talking about art direction, it's hard to find those people that are brilliant designers and still can develop a great concept.
Yeah.
Or strategic, you know, have a strategic mm-hmm. mind.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, craft is really the closest thing to pure art that we have in this business. But having that business sense and mm-hmm. the understanding of, you know, how that ladders into concept and how that ladders into actual strategy that sells product, like those are harder things to find. I know some of it comes with time. I know I'm sort of like looking at this through rearview mirror and compressing a lot of stuff, but, yeah. You know, it's, you know, what I see in portfolios, especially as you are like looking at junior or mid levels, is there does tend to be, you know, a one or the other, you know, on the art side, you know, writers, you know, it's a little different, you know, you're looking at the words and the ideas more so than the look and the layout, but
concept heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
But you know, we're moving beyond, especially as you get up in seniority, it's like, we're moving beyond the like partner pairings. I think, you know, in terms of like at a certain level, you know, it used to be, you still had a writer and art director tied together. And, you know, I see a lot, especially as agencies look towards, you know, how do we save money? You know, budgets are cut. And so it, you know, you could have an art director running an entire unit. And they have to be able to do all the things, you know,
yeah,
all
later.
The things.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I've seen it myself. I definitely understand that. And I think that's expected though, as you get to those higher levels, that you will start to understand, like when you get to a creative director level, you should be able to understand good writing and good design, good art as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Jason, we've talked a lot about some amazing things. How can people reach out to you if they want to find out more? Do you allow that? LinkedIn? Email?
Oh yeah. 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 For sure. For sure. LinkedIn is great. And, you know, I try and be as responsive as they can, yeah. For sure.
Amazing. Then I will list out your recommended resources, including your book. You want to give it a shout out?
Well, I've got Creative Directions is in, it's on Amazon. It's more targeted to people who are makers that are going into more leadership roles. And that could be associate creative director, it could be creative director, it could be bigger. And it speaks to people throughout the creative spectrum. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why I think it's a really necessary book. It's also a fun book to read because it's got a lot of amazing people who provide their perspectives. Ava DuVernay, the executive producers of Rick and Morty and The Simpsons, and they just they have different worlds, but they do have really relevant ideas of they were all started as people who wrote or you know did their craft that suddenly had to become managers. And then my first book is on Instagram that anyone can get. Still pretty relevant. It was called Look at Me When I'm Talking to You, Building Brand Attraction in an Age of Brand Aversion. And it's at Look at Me Book on Instagram.
Love it. For that first book, would it be beneficial for somebody just starting out? Maybe at like level? I think that would make sense.
I think so. Yeah. In fact, I turned it into Look at Me Academy after it came out, and I actually did courses at my agency. And so I had a lot of people just breaking into the industry, a lot of people who were on the younger side who took that course.
Love it. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. All right, Jason. Well, you're an icon. Thank you for sharing what you're doing at Meta and your whole story and your amazing campaigns that you've developed. I'm sure there's much more. So please reach out if you're listening. If you want to find out more information, I can also help facilitate that connection. But Jason, amazing work. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Gino. It's been fun.
Of course. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening to this entire episode of the Breaking and Entering Advertising podcast. If you like what you heard, it would mean a lot to us and help us grow and get better guests and better break-ins if you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave us 5 stars and a small review if you have the time. Be sure to connect with our guests if you like what they said by going to our Instagram at Breaking and Entering Pod. That's all one word, Breaking and Entering Pod on Instagram. We have links to their portfolios and their LinkedIn, and they want to connect, so do that. And thank yous. Thank you to Mikey Malarkey, our audio engineer, and Buchan Jung, our creative director. Can't do it without you two, and a team from the University of Illinois. It's a student team from the agency called AdBuzz, their PR agency, and it's been a pleasure working with them. Thank you all so much, and we will see you next week with another amazing guest.